There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
Well, 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 I think we made it. Today marks the first day of training camp for not one, but four teams. The Broncos, Ravens, Cardinals, and Seahawks. And it's his team now. Jaguars quarterback Nick Foles joins the show. He'll share his expectations for his first season at the helm in Jacksonville. And cue the countdown clock. Today marks the 50-day mark until the start of a brand new NFL season. And we covered the 50 biggest storylines between them. Happy to have you with us as we mark the 50-day mark between now and the start of a new NFL season. I'm Wendy Nix with Field Yates, Victor Cruz, and Lewis Riddick. And we're going to look at the 50 biggest storylines that we'll face over the course of the next 50 days, and none more pressing since training camp begins today, at least for four teams. Which players, Lewis, might we not see show up to training camp?
Well, I think the two really that are the headliners really are Jadeveon Clowney and Melvin Gordon in particular. I mean, Jadeveon hasn't been signed his franchise tender. We don't really know what's going to go on with him as far as, you know, when he will report, if he's going to report. You know he'll report at some point before the regular season starts. Melvin Gordon is one of these situations where, like, he wants a long-term deal. He's going to play on his fifth-year option. He wants to secure his long-term financial future right now, as all running backs want to. And Ezekiel Elliott, who you saw a brief clip there also in that clip right there, I mean, he's a guy who has two mere years left that he can play under his rookie contract. I mean, these running backs right now, they feel the accelerated, you know, sense of urgency to try and get their long-term deals done because they know teams are going younger and cheaper at running back, and they understand why. And these guys know they are not going to be fooled into thinking that you can, that they have to prove themselves before they get paid, because once they prove themselves, a lot of times teams won't pay them.
It's a whole different discussion to talk about sort of resetting that running back market. But there is no question that's where we are, and that's the reality those players are having to work within right now. Let me ask you this. We've seen a number of quarterbacks who are also in line or looking for a contract extension. Victor, who gets one?
I think it's Dak Prescott, mainly because, obviously, his age. He's the youngest out of the crew. I mean, when you look at Tom Brady as well as Phillip Rivers, he's the youngest quarterback out of that group that we're talking about. Obviously, these other two are phenomenally more accomplished than Dak Prescott is at this moment. But I think Dak Prescott, given his statistics, given his age, I think he gets done first. I think the other two guys obviously get extensions, maybe much smaller in years because of their age, and just kind of give them, I think they've earned that year-to-year kind of thing, and extend them for not too much time longer. But I think Dak Prescott gets paid out of these three.
And when you talk about those other two, of course, we're talking about Tom Brady and Phillip Rivers, both of whom will likely stay put and continue playing for their respective teams.
Right, a little bit different, right? I mean, the threat of either of those players departing and going somewhere else feels unlikely at this point. Both of them want to get a probably 2 or 3 year extension done that may not necessarily conclude their career, but it prolongs the current tenure with their teams. More of a familiarity there as compared to Dak Prescott, who for the first time and perhaps last time is going to be negotiating a contract of this magnitude.
Remember, a fourth-round draft pick, Dak Prescott, so that fifth-year option is not a factor at this point. That's why he's entering the final year of his deal. As long as we're talking about quarterbacks, let's talk Cam Newton. His shoulder has been an issue. How healthy is that shoulder?
Healthy enough, Wendy, to feel really good right now if you're a Panthers fan or if you're on the Panthers offensive staff. Remember, during the final days of the team's mandatory minicamp, Cam Newton took part in quarterback drills, and the feeling around Carolina has been that as we get ready for week one, Cam Newton will be ready, and you'll see a steady progress throughout training camp at lovely Spartanburg, South Carolina, a place you know quite well, Wendy.
Home of Wofford College, just saying. Spartanburg, South Carolina, home of Wofford College.
And your old stopping grounds.
Yes, well, exactly.
At Wofford.
At Wofford.
Just to make that clear.
Thank you.
Yeah, look, I mean, Cam is one of those guys who right now, I think, is in a good spot as far as how he is feeling. If you sit and you just monitor his social media, if you just look at it that way, he is in phenomenal shape. His body looks as good as it has ever looked. There has been some talk about whether or not he has adjusted his throwing motion so it can be a little bit more over the top and not so much maybe three-quarter sidearm, incorporating his lower body a little bit more to take some of the torque and the strain off of his lower body. It remains to be seen whether or not that's something that'll carry over into regular live game action when he really can't think about it and just has to do it instinctively. But I think what's important about Cam is this. As long as he's healthy, just let's stop hyper-analyzing Cam Newton. He's one of the great athletes that we've seen enter this league to play this position ever. And I think he's going to have probably one of the best years of his career. I think this football team is set up for some serious success down there in Carolina.
Look, and it is what it is at some point. I know we've talked about some adjustments for Cam Newton. He has made some, but he cannot become an entirely different style of quarterback. It's just not going to be how it works. I love how when we talk the 50 biggest questions, what, four of the first five are about quarterbacks, but that just seems to be how it works.
It
sorry, fellas. How many rookie quarterbacks will we see start week one? Victor?
I just got one. I got Kyler Murray. I think he comes into a unique situation where he's familiar with the calls, the play calling, that offense. He comes in with a leg up than other rookie quarterbacks in his class. I do think there's obviously some talent there in Daniel Jones as well as Dwayne Haskins. But I think Kyler Murray comes in a unique situation where he comes in as the guy, drafted number one. He's going to get the ball. When they roll that ball out there week one, he's going to be the one under center, as opposed to, I feel like, Dwayne Haskins and Daniel Jones. Sit back and learn a little bit, and their time will come a little bit.
No Dwayne Haskins week one, huh?
Not for me, at least.
It's interesting. I think that's probably the truest quarterback competition right now in the NFL is in Washington. Everything else, there might be an eventual change down the line, like with the New York Giants, for example. But in D.C., that might be the one authentic quarterback competition that we have going into this year. Dwayne Haskins and, of course, Case Keenum, the two most likely candidates to battle it out for that week one starting job.
All right, maybe not the sexy quarterback competition, but there is one, I think, in Miami. We've got Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen. A different situation for Josh Rosen altogether, as we know, given his very brief history. Who starts in Miami initially?
Yeah, I think it'll be Ryan Fitzpatrick. Indications coming out of there in the offseason during OTAs and minicamp that Ryan Fitzpatrick was much more comfortable and significantly ahead of Josh Rosen as far as being able to operate this offense at a high level and be efficient with his decision-making and accuracy. And quite honestly, I understand what they're going to want to try to do with Josh Rosen to figure out if they have answered their long-term plan at quarterback with him being on the roster. But unfortunately, he's operating at a deficit with this offensive line and lack of weaponry and a football team that really has to look down the road as far as when they're going to really be competitive. I mean, this kid could not have gone to two worse situations
to begin his career.
Exactly.
And it's just a prime example of how situations can ruin players and oftentimes will ruin players more so than the players themselves.
Right. It's really hard. If you open up the season with Josh Rosen under center and you struggle like we anticipate they might struggle, people are going to be saying right away, is he a lost cause as a quarterback? Was a second-round pick too much to pay? You have Ryan Fitzpatrick waiting in the wings. If you start with Fitz, and if things don't go well, it's all right. Well, we got the kid waiting in the wings. Let's give it a shot. Can't get any worse.
But when you look at the situation that he's a part of, and I kind of wouldn't want him in any other situation. When you can learn from a guy like Ryan Fitzpatrick, who's been around the league, who's had his ups and downs, that understands about going to different teams and facing different situations that may not be to his liking or to be in his favor, he's battled through that. And I think Josh Rosen can look at him and see some optimism and see things that he can learn from Ryan
Fitzpatrick. It's just unfortunate that he's at a place, Josh Rosen, is at a place where I really don't believe, and that's starting from the very top, that they expect to win. Mm-hmm. And it's okay if they don't, because they are taking the long ball approach. They are playing the long game down there. And Josh Rosen just happens to find himself in a situation where it's like, yeah, I know you don't have a lot to work with here. I know you're not exactly coming into a Pat Mahomes situation, you know, but hey, sorry, we still got to figure out what do we have with you. And it's just like, I mean, how can you? Context. Just remember that word, context.
Well,
And he's getting his.
It's funny you say that. Here's some context, because either Rosen or Fitzpatrick will be the Dolphins' 20th starting quarterback this century. 50 days, count them, 50 days to kick off, and we are working our way through 50 big storylines this afternoon. Someone has to go first. In this case, it is the Broncos. Denver says hello to both their rookies and veterans for camp today. First practice scheduled for tomorrow. The Broncos are their first team to have all of their players in-house because their first preseason test comes early, the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, on August 1st. Flacco was Denver's biggest offseason splash. He replaces last year's starter, Case Keenum. The Broncos also reinforced their secondary with a pair of starters in Bryce Callahan and Kareem Jackson. On the other side, they did lose Bradley Roby and Darian Stewart, along with starting center Matt Paradis. Here's Mark Schwartz with more from Denver.
Wendy, one of the things John Elway has always strived for with the Broncos is continuity. Well, he's got his fourth new head coach in 6 years, a new offensive coordinator, Rich Scangarello, who comes from San Francisco, and a new starting quarterback, 34-year-old Joe Flacco, who hasn't been to the playoffs for five seasons but has looked good in the offseason, and Elway seems extremely high on Flacco. Then again, he was also high on Case Keenum a year ago, said he would outperform Kirk Cousins for a lot less money, and we all know how that went. He did draft Drew Lock out of Missouri in the second round. Now, Lock is tremendously talented, but one problem, he is still unsigned. And until Lock does sign with the Broncos, he cannot participate in training camp, Wendy.
Mark, thank you. That's going to make things a whole lot easier if he does sign. We continue 50-50 storylines, and I think we stay right there. Is Flacco the answer for this team at the quarterback position?
Wendy, I think it's possible, but what I'm not buying is that Joe Flacco has to be sort of the game manager, to borrow a quarterback cliche, and that's going to be good enough for this Broncos team to compete. Because let's be honest, no team played the Chiefs last season, the reigning AFC West champions, better defensively than the Broncos did. You know what happened both those games? They still lost because they didn't have nearly the offensive horsepower to beat the Chiefs despite a standout defensive effort. You can't just score 21, 23 points a game and expect to win this division, which has two awesome teams, the Chiefs at the top and the Chargers behind him. He's got to elevate this offense, not just manage it.
All right, that begs the next question then. Where do the Broncos finish, Victor, in the AFC West?
Well, it's tough to put them anywhere near the top two, given the Chiefs and the Chargers and the type of teams that they are, and especially the season that they're coming off of. And obviously the Oakland Raiders are much improved. So where do we put them in terms of the top four teams in the AFC West? And I got them dead last still, because I just don't see them getting any better, especially offensively, not just with Joe Flacco, but the weaponry around him. Where is he going to get that playmaking ability? Those guys in Kansas City are putting up 30-40 a clip. You have to be able to match that same level of intensity offensively, and I don't think they have it just yet.
Yeah, I mean, really the deciding factor for me when you're talking about the bottom of the division between Derek Carr, Joe Flacco, who's going to be the third best team behind the Chargers, behind the Chiefs, I'm taking Derek Carr over Joe Flacco. And quite honestly, I think in due time, as long as Drew Lock can get himself into camp quickly and really learn this offense, I think in due time, you're going to wind up seeing him play this year. They don't have, you know what? I shouldn't say they don't have weaponry. They have pretty good wide receivers. They have a nice, diverse core. Emmanuel Sanders, for a guy who just tore his Achilles back in December, he looks spectacular as far as his rehab is concerned. Deshaun Hamilton is a guy from Penn State who they need to really have come on and be one of those playmakers for them. And Cortland Sutton is an absolute beast. This guy is huge, fast, big downfield threat. So they've got some people to throw the football to. And I didn't even mention Noah Fant, their rookie tight end from Iowa. So they've got some weapons. It's just whether or not Joe can sustain a high-level performance for 16 games, which I'm betting that he can't. They have a new play caller, Rich Scangarello, who's not even called plays before in the NFL. So you're right. Where are they going to get the points from? Oakland's going to put up some points.
No question.
Oakland's going to be a surprise team. People don't want to give them credit. Mm-hmm. They're going to be a surprise team.
So John Elway was just asked, because the Broncos have reported to camp, if Drew Lock would be signed and at practice tomorrow. His response, we'll see. So I guess we'll
no, no
see.
Reason for made, no reason for major concern here. It's just that you're a rookie quarterback. Every rep does matter, right? I mean, like, there's very little time to practice in the NFL these days. The more reps he can get, the better chance he has to be ready to compete with Joe Flacco. Maybe not for the starting job, but to at least be breathing down his neck.
Also because the fact of the matter is this. Drew Lock is a better talent than Joe Flacco. It's as simple as that. And you need him in there. You need him in there running your system with the number one guys as quickly as possible, because he is the future. Well, Joe is not the future.
And in the short term, I'm not sure a little healthy competition doesn't benefit Joe Flacco as well.
Yeah.
And everybody else.
Although
that
Joe
month.
May feel differently.
He might. Since winning Super Bowl MVP, Joe Flacco has the lowest yards per attempt of any quarterback to play 20 games. The current CBA, that's the collective bargaining agreement, set to expire after next season. And according to our Josina Anderson, the two sides are set to hold negotiations starting today through Friday, marking the first time they will meet for consecutive days to talk about a new deal. Dan Graziano reporting that the owners are motivated to close a deal prior to the start of this season because it will be the 100th NFL season. And there's a lot of marketing opportunities, obviously, that go along with that. And I don't think they want that marred in any way. Mm-hmm. But does this realistically get done by week one, Field?
You know, I hear what you just mentioned about the 100th NFL season makes this sort of extenuating circumstances different than a normal negotiation, which, as we know, Wendy, has traditionally gone to the 11th hour, in some cases has caused the
longer
NFL to be
that.
On stoppage and players
yep.
reporting in 2011 in, like, you know, early August for work. I'm a thread of hope right now. And maybe this is sort of muscle memory that I'm sort of trained to believe that these things will take as long as both sides believe they need to take. It's possible. I would just say that, you know, some of my optimistic is just cooled by the fact that we've seen this before.
For me, it's just get it right. You know,
yeah.
we're the NFLPA. Take your time. I don't care about the 100th season. No players care about that.
Right.
We care about, as players and guys that I've spoken to, about getting it right in favor for the players and not just having it feel so lopsided for the owners and for the people above us. We want it to feel fair. The players want to be, you know, held accountable and understand that what they're fighting for is real and is taken into account, and that the NFLPA gets it right and not just gets it done fast and quick because we got the 100th season coming up.
Yeah, and I would assume getting it right means get us more money.
Exactly.
Which means the revenue sharing plan, as far as revenue split is concerned, is going to be one of those hot topics, I believe, that would probably be at the forefront of their mind. Mm-hmm. And how soon guys can get some of that revenue, meaning this, fifth-year option, got to get it to go away.
Mm-hmm.
The franchise tag, how can we get that altered and tweaked here so it's not used as a weapon against us and something that is more favorable to us? And when I say us, I mean as players, since I've kind of been on both sides. So,
yes.
you know, I mean, I would assume that that's kind of what the players will be looking for. The owners obviously are going to want to keep as much money as they can.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's how rich guys get rich and stay rich.
I felt like I got lucky because I was a free agent, which means I was able to re-up after year three.
Mm-hmm.
After my third year in the NFL, I was qualified and eligible for an extension. And I think I was lucky. Like, if I was gotten drafted in the first or second, well, particularly in the first round, I'd have had to wait five
right.
years. Who knows what happens, injuries. Anything can happen in that much time. I think I was lucky to hit it first, similar to Dak Prescott, who was in his fourth year and doesn't have to have that.
It's the very reason we say careful what you wish for. You know, it's not where you start your NFL career,
mm-hmm.
but where you go from there. Because
right.
in some of these situations, unless you're an extremely high draft pick, you may be better off in some ways being in a different spot.
Exactly.
Go ahead, Lewis.
No, I was just going to say, and I think, because if you just look at the recent landscape, and we talked about this a little bit yesterday. You look, football players watch basketball players. We watch baseball players. We all watch each other.
Mm-hmm.
And football players now, they're playing the most dangerous sport with the shortest shelf life in terms of your career length. They're watching basketball players and going, man, these guys are dictating where they want to go mm-hmm. and what they want to get paid. And we sometimes are locked into, and you hear this word all the time, we can control the player for X amount of years. And mm-hmm. that has got to absolutely just make them grit their teeth going, we have to continually keep waiting. Actually, the higher you're drafted, the more control they have over
exactly.
you because of the mechanisms
yeah.
that are in place because of the CBA.
Option,
so I would assume the NFLPA is going, how do we get these knocked out of here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in some way
which
or altered.
Which is why it could
100%.
Take some time.
That's right.
Exactly.
It's just
yeah.
so much more difficult for the NFL to negotiate the CBA from the player and owner side. But from the player side, you've got 90 men on a roster that you're trying to acquiesce the desires of,
yeah.
right? For
Good
the
luck.
NBA, you might feel like a lot of the rules sort of favor the guys that are at the very top of the pay scale. Well, they're one of 12 on their roster. You know, you got 90 guys competing for roster spots. There are a lot of mouths to feed and a lot of needs to check off and be fair for.
But it doesn't. But that,
them,
but that still doesn't take away from the fact
it.
That you know
that's
what
it.
I mean. You know this, right? I mean, when guys
they
are looking at their own
today.
Situations, they're like, I don't care if there's two guys on this roster or 200. Mm-hmm. I want mine.
Get me
yeah.
with
yeah.
You know what I mean?
Shorter deals.
Okay, so yeah, it's not getting done. That's just
shorter
there
deals
we
and
go.
Guarantees.
Go back to
that's
the original
it.
Question.
It.
It's hard to make a better first impression than did Patrick Mahomes last season. In his first year as a starting quarterback, Mahomes became just the third player in NFL history to toss 50 touchdowns in a single season. Tom Brady, the first to reach that threshold in 07, while Peyton holds the all-time record with 55 touchdowns. And as we hit 50 of the biggest storylines on this day, 50 days to kickoff, we'll look at some quarterback questions for 2019. We're going to start right here. Will Mahomes throw for 50 touchdowns, Field?
Fun fact, Wendy, the NFL is entering its 100th season. As you
Fun
just
fact.
Alluded to, it's happened three times in which a quarterback has thrown 50 touchdowns. Patrick Mahomes is one of those players, but he will not repeat the fate. He will come dangerously close, I think 40
is the more realistic target for King Mahomes this season.
Uh-oh, Lewis Riddick is going to walk off this set.
We'll have to discuss this. Yep.
I quit.
Yeah, I figured you might. All right, Victor, will Carson Wentz stay healthy?
I think he has to. I think he has to understand how important he is to this football team, and him being on the field is the only positive attribute for this team in order for them to win. Obviously, hitting and injuries is part of the game and things happen, but he has to find a way to take less hits on his body, get out of bounds when he needs to, and throw the football down to his playmakers, because that's what he's paid to do.
All right, can Bruce Arians' magic return? And the question is then, will Jameis Winston realize his potential?
He'll improve this year, Wendy, but I'm not convinced he will fully realize his potential, in part because this division is so good. Wins are going to be hard to come by, and there's going to be some holes in this roster that are going to be too difficult to overcome. I think Jameis will improve, but ultimately still going to be a fascinating player negotiating a contract 8 years from now because he is in the final year of his rookie deal.
How much will Lamar Jackson improve, Victor?
He has to improve a lot. I think understanding that, yes, he's very skilled athletically running the football when the pocket breaks down and when he gets outside to those numbers like you see here. But what's going to change his game is in the pocket. Can he make plays? Can he read coverages? Can he get the ball down to his playmakers and then use his legs and his athleticism as a secondary attribute, right? Because that's what's going to keep guys off balance when they know that you can run the football. After they see you pass the ball effectively, can you run and keep these defenses off balance? I think that's a tough task for him this year.
And finally, there's been a change in scenery. Will Nick Foles turn the Jags around, Lewis?
Yeah, I believe he will, provided the relationship between he and John DeFilippo is similar to the relationship that he had with Doug Peterson when he was in Philadelphia, which means there's a tremendous amount of play-calling camaraderie and a play-calling connection on game day. Let me just put it that way as far as John knowing exactly what Nick likes to run. Nick adopting that point guard mentality like he had in Philadelphia, which was just get the ball out of my hands fast into the hands of my playmakers, cut down on turnovers, and let the guys who are paid to run with the football, let them run with the football, and I don't have to do anything outside of my comfort zone. As long as he does that and the defense holds up their end of the bargain, produces turnovers like they did a couple years ago, I think Jacksonville will be right back in the hunt.
He should be a big upgrade under center, including the playoffs. No starting quarterback has a better record than Foles over the last two seasons. He's also, as you mentioned, Lewis, taking care of the football better than did Blake Bortles, who tied for a league high with 76 turnovers as the Jaguars quarterback. Jaguars quarterback Nick Foles joins us now, brought to us by performance food and beverage company Bulletproof 360. And Nick, let's start with the obvious. First of all, congratulations. A four-year deal in Jacksonville worth a lot of money. And I know you were probably anxious to get that all settled. What did it feel like to sign a long-term deal like that and solidify your future as a starting quarterback?
It was truly exciting. Something that, you know, everyone always dreams about. We were very blessed to, you know, be in Philadelphia for a few more years, but, I was always watching Jacksonville from afar, and to end up in Jacksonville, in a great organization that has a bright young future, is really exciting. And obviously they invested in me, in a four-year deal. So we've already been able to get to work, and I'm excited about what the future holds for us.
What's the first thing you do in a situation like this, Nick, when you come in as a starting quarterback, but also one that everyone else you play with knows the team has invested in and is looking to lead?
I think the big thing is just being genuine. Just because the contract has all these numbers that's so different, I don't need to change. I need to be true to who I am. I mean, that's why they invested in me in the first place. I know Jacksonville did a lot of research on me to invest like they did. So the big thing is just go in there and be true to who I am. That makes life a lot more easier. It makes every day a lot more fun. And I think people respond better to genuine people than opposed to people that, quite frankly, can be fake.
Sure. This offense, Nick, as you know, struggled last year. You come in and you're charged with changing that and also changing the narrative. How do you do that?
Obviously it's one day at a time. It's one moment at a time. Coach DeFilippo and I always call him Flip, have known each other for several years. We were together in Philly when we won the Super Bowl, and, we were in the QB room with him every single day. So having that knowledge of the offense is huge. He's obviously put his own wrinkle on it. That's really exciting. But it's really just getting guys up to speed and Everyone getting to know one another, building those relationships. And I'm going to sound like a broken record, but I'm a firm believer in the fourth quarter. You know, the team that has the stronger relationships are the ones who, you know, are going to excel the best. And the ones that are going to, you know, end up winning in the fourth quarter. So that's what we're working on right now.
So with that relationship, now that you're reunited with Flip, you know, how does that change the learning curve when you come to a new team, yet there's some relationships that were previously in place?
It's really exciting. You're not starting over 100% from scratch. You know, it's always new going to a new place and moving and getting to know a lot of new people, but that's always the exciting part. But to have a few pieces in place that, you know, whether it's teammates I've played with before or Coach Flip, you know, that helps the process because I do have a knowledge of the offense. We're able to discuss the offense in greater detail at an early stage during OTAs and during mini camp to where we can really grow from it and make the changes if we need to make changes or add things if we need to add things. So by the time, you know, going in the training camp, we're ready to get even better. And that's what we were able to accomplish during the OTA phase and the mini camp phase, which was really exciting. And I'm really looking forward to what the, you know, we start in a week or less than a week. So I'm really excited about this training camp and moving forward with this offense and with this team.
That certainly makes sense. And while we're talking about relationships, by all accounts, you had a very positive relationship with Carson Wentz. And let's be frank, it wasn't an easy situation, I'm sure, for either quarterback or any of those quarterbacks in that room. Have you two kept in touch during the off season?
Yeah, he sent me a text when I signed my deal, just congratulating me. He was excited for me. And then I also sent him one when he, you know, got his extension. Just, you know, excited for him. And I, you know, obviously Philadelphia thinks the world of him and they're investing in him for their future. And I always like to add, you know, when I was in Philadelphia, it was Nate Sudfeld, Carson, and I, you know, that was the QB room that we went to, you know, work with every single day. And it was an exciting place to work. You know, some of the, you know, greatest memories. I know Carson stated it when he was asked in a press conference about me, was coffee. You know, if you go to our little QB nook, there's bulletproof coffee right there. We made almost every single morning to get us going. So I'm really going to, you know, miss Nate and Carson and those guys. It was a fun part of my life and my playing career, but, you know, I'm excited about the future in Jacksonville and, you know, I always love and appreciate everyone in Philadelphia.
Well, I'm sure it'll be a lot of fun to put your stamp on a new team as well, a new season fast approaching. We certainly wish you the best of luck, Nick. Congratulations again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Foles and the Jags still a week away from the start of their training camp, but today is the reporting date for rookies on three other teams, the Cardinals, the Ravens, and the Seahawks. And that means Kyler Murray arriving in Arizona, which is a perfect segue for us to talk rookie quarterback expectations. And Lewis will stay right there and talk about the number one overall pick, Kyler Murray.
Well, look, there are recent examples of number one overall picks when they got their chance to shine, just ripping it up right out of the gate. Look, Baker Mayfield, thank you. He's done it. Kyler Murray is coming into an offense that he knows, that he's comfortable with. This is exactly what Cliff Kingsbury wanted. I think he comes out of the gate fast. I don't think it's out of the realm of expectations for him to have 3,500 yards, 20-plus touchdowns, complete 63% of his passes. For Arizona, maybe to be 500. That's a lot.
All right, Victor, you don't have him starting week one, but tell me about Dwayne Haskins.
I have him learning. I think he's in a position where I know he has a chip on his shoulder. I know all the things that's coming into training camp and coming into his, you know, first couple months here as a professional, and I understand that. But I think he's in a position to learn from Case Keenum, understand what it is to be a professional quarterback, understand what it is to be day in and day out. He'll see his time more sooner than later.
All right, Daniel Jones, Field.
Yeah, and this is going to sound so simple, Wendy, but it's grow. This is a player that some believe needed at least a full year to develop to become a full-time starter in the NFL. Well, he's got an excellent chance to have a good portion of this year as the backup to Eli Manning. Obviously, there was a lot of skepticism about the Giants using the sixth overall pick for Daniel Jones, but from a learning curve standpoint, he's got a pretty good opportunity to kind of soft launch into his career.
Is there? I hadn't heard.
Skepticism.
A little bit.
Victor can say something about it.
Oh, man.
All right, it is, but let's step away from the QBs for just a minute. Your rookie impact player that's not a quarterback.
Oh, for me, you know.
On offense, let me say.
I love wide receivers.
Well, yeah.
So,
sure.
Naturally.
No.
So I'm going with Paris Campbell. I think he's a guy that has tremendous speed. I think he's improved his route running as the season progressed. At Ohio State, And I think he fell into the perfect situation with a quarterback like Andrew Luck, who's obviously a veteran quarterback who understands how to get the best out of his wide receivers. And then when you look in that receiver room, you got T.Y. Hilton, you got obviously Paris Campbell, you got Eric Ebron, who understands how to play the game of football and obviously caught double-digit catches last year. I think Paris Campbell is the most set up for perfection, or for success, rather, as the wide receiver position in Indianapolis.
All right. A lot of real estate between success and perfection there. Slip of the tongue. But you never know.
Go ahead and fix that.
That's what Lewis is talking about, Patrick Mahomes. He uses the P word.
Right. It is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. But let me ask you about the impact rookie on defense.
Yeah, I'm going to be consistent on this one. I'm going to say it's Devin Bush Jr. from Michigan, first-round pick of the Pittsburgh Steelers. He gets to play behind one of the better 3-4 defensive lines in the NFL. They have some grown men up there in front of him. He is going to be the leader in the middle of this 3-4. He has every tool you could possibly imagine to be successful in today's game and the way today's game is played, which is as much horizontally as it is downhill and with power, which he can do both. Mike Tomlin is ecstatic about him, so he's got nothing but sponsorship in this organization. They're going to give him every opportunity to excel. From a physical perspective and a football intellect perspective, he's got it nailed. He's got all the people behind him, good players in front of him, an improving secondary. Pittsburgh's going to be a force to be reckoned with. We've talked about him a couple times this week. They're back.
I don't see why anyone at this point would discount the Steelers. I mean, they missed the playoffs last year for the first time in quite a long time. That was the exception, I think, rather than the rule in Pittsburgh.
All the buzz is around Cleveland.
I'd be careful. I wouldn't sleep on the Steelers.
They're listening.
I don't think they mind right now. Mm-hmm. You know, let Cleveland be the hunted. Devin Bush, by the way, the Steelers' highest drafted defender since Rod Woodson in 1987.
A long time. I was a freshman in college.
Oh, man.
In honor of the 50 days until kickoff, how about the longest streaks? Ezekiel Elliott, Kareem Hunt. Each rushed for 50 yards in their last 8 games. T.Y. Hilton owns the longest streak of 50 receiving yards, the only receiver on the Colts with over 500 yards last season. So Andrew Luck certainly leaned on his top target. A streak that could be in jeopardy, though, Todd Gurley's 31-game run of 50 scrimmage yards. Gurley has never failed to reach 50 scrimmage yards since Sean McVay became the head coach. And then there's Patrick Mahomes, never had a total QBR below 50 in his career. And since QBR began, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, and Matt Schaub have only longer streaks than does Mahomes. We continue now with press coverage from our own Jeff Legwald in Denver. Broncos coach Vic Fangio said Wednesday, running back Philip Lindsay is ready to go, but will continue to be worked in gradually as they begin practice, which, by the way, is tomorrow. Lindsay was held out of afternoon workouts after wrist surgery. Fangio said Lindsay will be worked in quickly. The Broncos, the first team to hit the field for training camp since they will play in the Hall of Fame game coming up shortly. 50 days until kickoff, so we've got 50 pressing questions. Packers and Bears kick things off on Thursday, September 5th in Chicago. So we continue covering 50 of the biggest storylines leading up to kickoff. And among those, a question about Mitchell Trubisky. Does he break out in year 3?
You know, I guess it's sort of a subjective answer as to what breakout means, Wendy, but we saw such improvement from year 1 to year 2, which was obviously the first year with Matt Nagy. I kind of feel like it's inevitable that it's going to only get better. And this is one of the rare situations. I talked earlier about how the Broncos cannot afford to simply have Joe Flacco manage games and win their division. The Bears don't need Mitch Trubisky to be the best quarterback in the NFC North to win this division. They're absolutely loaded. They've got a phenomenal defense and a bunch of playmakers on offense. That steady improvement from Mitch Trubisky is going to put this team right back where it was last year, which is a legit NFC contender. I really believe that.
Yeah, I think they are loaded as well, and I think that obviously eases the pressure on Mitch Trubisky. Last year, he had over 3,000 passing yards, 24 touchdowns, had over 400 rushing yards as well. So I think he's definitely going to take another step. And just having that comfort and knowing your defense is stellar, you just have to go out there and be yourself and not turn the ball over and make good decisions with the football and understand who you are. And I think he's getting comfortable and relishing in that responsibility. And I think it's only a matter of time before he breaks out. I think this year is the year where he has that. They got all the weapons. They got all the tools that he needs to be successful. And I think this is the year where he has one of those seasons where you go, wow, look what Trubisky's doing in
Chicago. All right. Good news for Bears fans.
Yep. A little inside info.
Oh, excuse me.
They love what he's looking like.
Mm-hmm.
His maturation from last year to this year, his understanding of the offense from last year to this year is light years apart. He's now able to, like, experiment and do certain things within this offense. I mean, you know how this goes. Mm-hmm. Like, now I'm not having to think and having to sit there and go, what was the play call again? What exactly. was the formation? What was the personnel grouping? Yep. He knows all that. He can finish Matt's play call for him.
Yep.
And now they love their running back room. They love David Montgomery, him combined with Tariq Cohen, Mike Davis. They think, look, they think this year the offense could really close. It's funny that you talk about it this way. They think the offense can close the gap on the defense as far as who really is driving the bus up there. Mm-hmm. And if they can do that and Chuck Pagano can keep that defense playing at the same level Vic Fangio
then
did.
Then I think we got something.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Would it be a fly on the wall in those practices, right? That offense down. Up against that yeah. defense in practice.
That's right.
That'll be fun to watch.
All right, listen, if you can argue, and I think you probably can, that the relationship between Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers went a long way to shape what happened yeah. last season in Green Bay, then obviously you can make an additional argument that it will go a long way this year in terms of Rodgers and Matt LaFleur. So the question, and Lewis, I'll start with you, is how does that evolve, in your opinion, new head coach and a very veteran quarterback?
I think it's imperative, Wendy, that they start fast. They have success early. So therefore, you know, Aaron believes that Matt can impact his career positively, make one of the great quarterbacks of all time even greater, even better, even more efficient, even in the offense even better. Because if it doesn't happen that way, and there are those restrictions that you already hear being talked about that Matt LaFleur's offense puts on Aaron at the line of scrimmage, and then that kind of manifests itself in some losses or some turnovers or the offense kind of just sputtering a little bit, then you have a problem. They need to have success now. Because I don't think anyone would really, you know, characterize Aaron Rodgers from afar, at least from my perspective from afar, as being patient, as being someone who really wants to sit there and kind of wait on anybody
yeah.
to kind of do anything. You know what I mean? So I think starting fast is key here.
Yeah, I agree. I think starting fast is definitely the key. And obviously winning cures all with relationships. Similar to, you know, Odell's relationship in Cleveland, winning cures all. The minute you start winning and the more – And not just winning, I feel like, for Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur. I think it's the perception that goes out there, how they prepare for games. It's the full body of work leading up to the game day on Sundays. That week before, what's the preparation like? How is it different than what it was with McCarthy a year ago? Like, what does that change? I think all of that combined is what's going to make Aaron Rodgers feel good about coming in and week out and how that relationship will continue to grow. But obviously, winning is the focal point of all of it.
All right, we talked about week one. That's Bears and Packers. Doesn't get a whole lot better than that. But there are some other games on week one you're going to want to watch, and this is certainly among them. Steelers in New England to face the Patriots, Lewis.
Yeah, the football team, again, that we've been talking about a lot this week, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Week one against the New England Patriots where, look, I think Bill will be the first to tell you, you really don't know your football team at this point in the season. And really, during the game itself, coaches are learning things about their own team and the team they're playing against. So coaching itself, players that have a high degree of football intellect are the ones that really make the difference early in the season. And that usually favors the Patriots. And the Patriots usually come out of the gates just storming and just putting the hammer down on people. And they have a lot of new players that integrate into this offense and defense. So that's going to be an interesting game to watch from a bunch of different perspectives.
How about the Colts at the Chargers?
Yeah, two teams that lost in the AFC divisional round last year, Wendy, but both hoping to make a leap this season. I think the Colts are a team that are well-oiled. We talked about for the future power rankings, they ranked number one for a project Lewis and I worked with Kevin Seifert on. And for the Chargers, they've got basically every tool, every club in the bag to be really successful. It's going to be a little bit of just prove yourself on the grandest stage for people to fully buy in. But this game should be awesome in Los Angeles.
All right, how about a little Monday Night Football opener, the first of the doubleheader, Texans and Saints.
It's going to be a fun one to watch on Monday night. Obviously, Deshaun Watson trying to get back to where he was last year and completing the ball to that guy, DeAndre Hopkins, and making a bunch of different plays. J.J. Watt will be a force going up against Drew Brees. He's going to have a tough task in getting to that quarterback. But obviously, Drew Brees and his powerful offense, man, they're going to be a bunch of points scored in this game. I'm excited to watch all these guys get after it. And Drew Brees, I'm sure he's got a lot to prove when he wants to put a statement on what this NFL season for the New Orleans Saints will be like come week one.
All right, you'll be there to call this one, Lewis. Broncos and the Raiders.
Well, the best part of this game is the fact that I'm going to be there. No, kid. No, this is going to be a great matchup between two teams that really are trying to reestablish themselves and two franchises that really can't stand each other. The Broncos, Joe Flacco, right? We already talked about him. How good are you going to be? Can you lift this offense? Can you make this young wide receiver core minus Emmanuel Sanders, who isn't exactly young but isn't old. Can you make them better? Defense is going to be strong. The Raiders, I think, are my surprise team this year. The more I talk about them, the more I study them, the more I look at their roster, 1-2-53, or their projected roster, this has the potential to be a very, very explosive football team. John Gruden is going to earn every bit of that 10-year, $100 million contract, and he would probably have it no other way, considering now he's got the team kind of shaped the way he wants it with his guys.
That's a lot of wins. That's a lot of wins.
Sure.
A lot of wins. A lot of dollars. All right, speaking of which, Antonio Brown also got a lot of dollars in Oakland, and here are a number of other wide receivers who could be in line to cash in before the season kicks off. Michael Thomas with the Saints.
He's really the last player New Orleans has to extend in their core that's sort of pressing on the front burner right now. You expect him to look to make more money on an average annual basis than any wide receiver in football. Ultimately, one of the best bargains in the NFL if he plays that final year out, but I do think there's a lot of optimism. A contract can be worked out between the Saints and Mike Thomas, who do have some good breathing room now to get a deal done if you look at their current cap situation.
Falcons owner Arthur Blank said to Julio Jones, we'll get this done. So you have to believe, because there's a history there, Lewis, that the Falcons do get a new deal with Julio Jones.
No doubt about that. Look, Julio could be sitting here screaming from the mountaintop that he should, on an average per year basis, be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. Not just because of his freakish athletic ability, because no one in Atlanta, no one in the NFL will say a single bad word about this guy. And with that kind of character, that is worth something in terms of dollars. This guy deserves every single penny. I don't think the number is too high for him.
Amari Cooper with the Cowboys, Victor.
I think this guy is extremely important to the wide receiving core of the Dallas Cowboys. And not just the core, but the entire offense in general. After they acquired him, he was off the charts. And his ability, the things he showed, the reliability that he showed for Dak Prescott to have someone to throw the ball up to and make a play for him, it's extremely important. And I know they got some guys they got to pay over there in Dallas, but it's important to keep him, keep that number one receiver on that team.
And finally, Field, A.J. Green.
Yeah, the Bengals love to do deals a year out from a player's contract expiring. That's where we're at with A.J. Green. But I got to be honest with you, Wendy, if this is a team that thinks it might not necessarily be in the thick of it come the end of this regular season, I wonder if Cincinnati, and I'm not saying they will, but I think it will be reasonable business to explore a trade of A.J. Green if they don't have a long-term deal in place by the start of the regular season. So much gas left in the tank, but this is a team that feels like one that's ready to rebuild.
Some other coin flip debacles, if you will? Steelers-Lions in overtime. Jerome Bettis calls tails, but the ref thinks he calls heads. The bus is not happy about it, and the Steelers would lose that game 19-16. Super Bowl 48, Joe Namath out for the opening coin toss, but flips too early. Luckily, referee Terry McCauley was out there to help this along. Patriots and Jets game would go to overtime. Matthew Slater and the Patriots call heads. Slater is then confused as to why the Patriots elected to kick. New England wound up losing that game. And finally, the 2015 divisional playoffs, Packers-Cardinals, game in overtime. Green Bay calls tails, but the coin doesn't flip. That is always a problem. And they have to flip it again. The Cardinals got the ball. Arizona won. Those coin tosses are tricky.
Yes, you couldn't call
evidently.
A coin flip if it doesn't flip.
No, that's just
what would it be called? Launch. It's a coin launch.
Coin launch. Okay, listen, we're going to launch some 50-50 questions here, if you will. Again, 50 days till the start of a new NFL season. Are you ready?
Never been more ready for anything in my life.
All right, fair enough. Let's start with Eli Manning, shall we? Will he start more than 50% of the Giants games this season? By the way, we have asked the Twitter about this. We're going to show you what you said first, and then we'll tell you what we think. All right, Twitter says 54% affirmative. What say you, Victor?
I say the same. I believe with Twitter land, I'm going with 54% as well. I think it's his job to lose at this point. I think if he comes out and he plays well and he does good, obviously they're going to give him every chance to fail in New York. It's his job to lose, and I think he doesn't lose it halfway through the year. I think he at least plays 54% of the year.
I like to call it the Twitter. Will the Browns finally break their playoff drought first? Twitter says is yes, no, yes, no. I have no idea, but somewhere I'm going to find out, right? There it is.
There we go.
68% yes.
Yes, they do.
That must be dog pound Twitter voting right there for
Cleveland
sure.
Heard.
As I've said, this is not about hope anymore. They're expecting to win up there. They expect OBJ to be the savior. They expect a guy like Nick Chubb to run for 1,400 yards. Jarvis Landry to be a supporting playmaker to OBJ. But really what it comes going to come down to up there in Cleveland, it's really, again, it's about the head coach. It's about Freddie Kitchens. And that's not a negative thing. That's a positive thing. That's why you're the head coach. That's why John Dorsey hired you. That's why he put all his trust in you. So as long as he can keep it all together, this is a football team. I believe they'll win double-digit games. And I think with double-digit games comes a playoff berth. I agree.
It would snap a 16-season drought, obviously the longest in the NFL right now.
It has been a minute. It is.
Yes,
been a minute.
It has.
All right, we can thank Drew Rosenhaus for this next question, I think, because he sort of like cracked open the door. Will Rob Gronkowski play this season? Survey says, oh, 3 out of 4.
You know, as always, the people are correct. I, too, will add to the no column. As you mentioned, Wendy, this all started because Drew Rosenhaus, the excellent agent for Rob Gronkowski, said, hey, you know, I think it's possible he could explore a comeback. You know, Tom might call you up later in the season. Julian Edelman hits you up and says, what do you think, man? One more run. Gronk himself has given no indication. That's part of his plan. And if you've seen Gronk recently in public settings, you can tell this is a guy lost a bunch of weight. He has taken his post-playing, at least for now, career and sort of reshaped his body. He does not look like a tight end anymore. He looks like an oversized wide receiver. I'm going with no. I think the Patriots are preparing to just batten down the hatches and make do with the group of tight ends they have right now. Benjamin Watson, Matt LaCoste, and some of the other incumbent pieces.
They'll definitely be tight end by committee. And then,
yeah. Yes, they will. And they're okay with that, I think.
100%.
They've done that before.
Yep.
Will Aaron Donald win a third straight Defensive Player of the Year? The people feel that in
100%. Oh. Shield your eye. Shield your eyes.
It's tight.
It's definitely close.
What's wrong with these people?
Listen, the only thing stopping Aaron Donald from winning another MVP is Aaron Donald. I mean, the guy can go through double teams. He can go through single teams. He can go through any team. I mean, all you have to do is put him in position to win, and he can perform at a high level. I think it's his MVP trophy to lose. But as long as he comes out and is the dominant force that he is, he'll be in contention for that year in and year out.
In defense of the people,
okay.
No player has ever won three straight defensive.
Wow. Well, the only thing that will keep him from winning a third one would, one, be, God forbid, injury.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, people just decide we're tired of voting him in there.
Yeah.
Which could happen.
Which could happen.
We've seen that happen before. Look, the guy has the total. I don't need to say.
You know, we've been there, done that. Exactly. We get it. He's very, very, very good. All right, well, let's talk best 50-50 receiver. We're clearly going to let you go first, Victor.
Oh, you can let me go first. We just saw him a little bit ago. His name is DeAndre Hopkins. I just feel like his skill set and what he does, even just from route running and catching the ball normally, is already off the charts. But when you add a 50-50 ball, anytime you see him outside one-on-one and there's a go route or a nine route, you give him the football and you make him come down with the ball. You just give him that shot. You give him that 50-50 chance. Because 9 times out of 10, he's catching the ball and doing something like that with it.
All right, Gildy, I do have an opinion. Your best 50-50 receiver.
Julio!
The
man needs a new contract, as Lewis alluded to earlier on in the show. But look at this guy. Unbelievable. He's got such good ball skills and such a good sort of hand placement and leverage and ability to leap. They play him on defense. He actually had an interception. He's made a tackle before. This guy's an absolute behemoth, as you can tell. There really is no stopping Julio Jones. The Falcons just got to find ways to manufacture more touches in the red zone. This guy deserves more touchdowns than he has currently had over the past few years.
All right, Louie, down there at the end.
Yes, Mike Evans. He's basically 6'5". He's 6'4¾". He's 230 pounds. The guy's a monster with a tremendous wingspan. And you know what? How about this statistic? 80% of his catches this year went for first downs.
Right,
that's not always just because you're wide open, just running down the field uncontested. He's beaten DBs to the football over and over and over again, and it's like rebounding for him. He just boxes you out. He's just too long, too big, too strong. You just throw it near him, first down. Move the chains.
Move them. All right, let's look at some fantasy questions again. 50 days till kickoff. We got 50 questions. We're talking wide receivers. You stay in that vein. Who's your top fantasy wide receiver?
You can make a bunch of cases here, Wendy. How about Devontae Adams with the consistency last year? Double-digit scoring in every single game he played. Remember, he missed Week 17 with an injury. Also, over the past three seasons, here's the full list of players that have at least 10 receiving touchdowns. Devontae Adams. That's the entire list. This guy
has money in the bank.
Upside. He's consistent. I love this player. Certainly so much chemistry between he and Aaron Rodgers.
Who are you taking number one overall?
Yeah, this one's easy. And Lewis, he stole him from everybody else last year. People were saying, Lewis is crazy. What are you doing, dude? Stick to real football.
Saquon!
None of this fantasy nonsense. And yet, Saquon Barkley was by far the best player in fantasy football last year amongst running backs. The case for him is the MVP. He was unbelievable. Do it again this year.
He hurt me down the stretch, though.
You complained.
I still like
you
it.
I
told him about it at Super Bowl, so he killed my fantasy.
You did. I was there for that, actually. Which running back situation are you watching?
I'm going San Francisco's. They made some legit investments in players over the past couple of off seasons. Jerick McKinnon, the Torres ACL, should be ready to go at some point during training camp this offseason. Tevin Coleman, 2 years, $10 million. But how about Matt Breida? He ran really well last year. This team's going to have to find a way to sort through the touches there. There could be an odd man out, but more importantly, if there's a guy who emerges as the lead horse, that's really important.
All right, when are you drafting a quarterback?
Later than other people will. I'll tell you that right now. Right now, Patrick Mahomes is going on average 19th overall, and I love Patrick Mahomes. We all do. Deshaun Watson's going 38th overall. That's where I'm more comfortable with Patrick Mahomes, in the fourth round. There's just too much supply of good quarterbacks. Last year, the difference between the 20th best quarterback and the 5th best quarterback was about 30 points over the entire year. There is just not enough differentiation to use an early premium.
Wow. All right, your fantasy sleeper.
Well, a lot of people are saying, like, you know, I know too much. How about Justice Hill, fourth-round running back out of Oklahoma State? The guy has got so much speed. That is the element of his game that's going to stand out. And really, that was a big investment for the Ravens this offseason. Speed on offense. I know Mark Ingram is the lead guy, but as we know every year, there are rookies who eventually emerge. Justice Hill, I've got my eye on.
Indeed. Well, the Denver Broncos, the first of four teams to report to camp today. They'll hold their first practice tomorrow. They check in early because of the Hall of Fame game scheduled on August 1st. Our Mark Schwartz is there and caught up with Von Miller.
Alongside seven-time Pro Bowler Von Miller, your new coach, Vic Fangio, who's coached all the greats, Ray Lewis, Khalil Mack, he says you have more to give. What do you think he means, and what do you have more to give?
I like it. I mean, I want a coach that's going to come in and coach me hard, that's going to demand the best out of me. You know, I feel like my coaches have done that, but, you know, none of the coaches have, been like Coach Fangio. Like you said, he's coached all the greats. You know, whatever he tells me to do, I'm up for it. You know, I want to be his greatest player, so... You know, I got a season to prove that, and I'm excited about it.
What goals do you have personally that you have not yet achieved?
I mean, I haven't, you know, won Defensive Player of the Year, haven't led the league in sacks. You know, there's quite a few goals. You know, I want to play about 85%, you know, of my plays. I haven't done that in any season that I've played in. So, you know, Coach Fangio has some high goals for me, and I got high goals for myself. So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be exciting.
The last 3 years, you have been a 99, a perfect score on Madden. And now, as you may know, you're in the 97 group. What do you think of that, and does it motivate you?
I mean, it's Madden. You know, I mean, I like being 99, but it's a classic case of perception versus reality. You know, you just got to go out there and play. It's not only me. You got some quarterbacks in there that was rated real low. I mean, Cam Newton, 84. I mean, come on. Like, I don't know what's going on with it, but it's cool. You know, it's a video game, and they always update the overall, you know, as the season goes. But, you know, it's a video game at the end of the day.
Well done, Mark Schwartz. I like it. How about some 50-yard touchdowns on this, the 50 days before kickoff? You know what? We talked about Ryan Fitzpatrick earlier competing for that starting job in Miami. That's to Mike Evans for the 50-yard strike.
The ultimate YOLO quarterback. I love watching Fitzmagic at the beginning of last season. That was
like that. YOLO quarterback.
That wasn't a contested 50-50 ball.
No, it was not.
I'm not sure coaches like YOLO quarterback.
That's fair enough.
A lot of teams.
Week 15. Christian McCaffrey on a fourth down play just pulls up throws the touchdown pass. You go, Christian.
What can't he do? And by the way,
nothing.
Chris Manhurst with the most random touchdown scored of last season. Seriously, I think it was his one catch of last year.
15 more yards, he wouldn't have had that touchdown.
So,
but he got to it.
Yeah, and this one, Lewis Riddick Curtis fantasy points. Just cha-ching, cha-ching.
Later.
Cha-ching. Saquon Barkley, a 50-yard touchdown run.
Untouched,
it's just,
too.
It's just kind of crazy. The ability this kid has.
Too easy.
I mean,
got the right
look
colors
at the
on.
Lateral mobility.
Got the right colors on.
And then acceleration.
All right, cracking open the vintage vault for perhaps the greatest number 50. Bears linebacker Mike Singletary inducted into the Hall of Fame in 1998 after a 12-year career with Chicago. However, young ones out there might remember him more for this press conference when he was the 49ers head coach.
You know what? This is how I believe, okay? I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. It is more about them than it is about the team. I cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners. I want people that want to win.
Can't do it. All right, storylines with current number 50 linebackers. How about that? Next level. Sean Lee moving to outside linebacker.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit out of necessity, and it's really to help Sean Lee stay in the league a little bit longer, see if they can keep him healthy, keep him out of the traffic at the Mike linebacker position, keep some people away from his lower body. He is a fantastic linebacker overall. He can play all three positions. Besides, they got two young kids who can handle the middle linebacker position if need be.
And Telvin Smith taking a year off from football.
Yeah, Wendy, he said this is a personal issue. He's got to take care of. He needs time away from the game. You have to respect his decision, as difficult as it probably is for the Jaguars defensively and their fans. You know, they want to see a phenomenal player, a team captain, one of the more athletic linebackers in football. 2019 is off for him. We'll see what 2020 and future years hold for Telvin Smith.
He leads the Jags in snaps and tackles since debuting in 2014.
Challenge flag. See how the offseason arm is. Two, the Chicago Bears find yourself a kicker. Currently, the depth chart includes Elliott Frey, Eddie Pinheiro, acquired via a trade this offseason from the Oakland Raiders. We know 42 yards was the elusive distance. 43. Anyways, find a kicker.
Here's my flag. I'm challenging you, Lamar Jackson, to be a well-rounded quarterback. Learn how to throw from the pocket so you can be multidimensional with the Baltimore Ravens.
My challenge flag is for Mike Tomlin. Hey, look, I know you're saying that you didn't have any other problems on your football team, that the culture was good, everything else was fine, minus a few issues. My challenge flag to you is this. Just go ahead, maybe squash a little bit of this hype that's coming out of Cleveland.
I had to throw mine early because they took all the time. Nick Foles, show you're not a system quarterback. Get it done in Jacksonville, just like he did in Philly. That's how you do it.
My challenge is to Wendy to make better mac and cheese for her kids. That's my challenge.